Hello, this is Joe McGee. You know, we've been doing seminars across the country for years. Seminars on marriage, parenting, men, money, and family. We want to encourage you to email us and let us know if this podcast has helped you. Or maybe you have joined us live at one of our seminars. If you have a testimony, you just want to tell us what God's doing in your life, please email us at mail@joemcgeeministries.com, or you can contact us through our website, joemcgeeministries.com. There you will find helpful articles and tools to help you grow in God, your marriage, and your family. I love you guys. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Hey, everybody. We're excited because we're back with another Mailbag Monday podcast. And today, my wife Angel is sitting here and we're answering questions.
Yeah, and what we've done is we've asked you to get onto Facebook or Instagram and submit your questions. And so today is our second Mailbag Monday. Welcome.
So let's go ahead and jump in and look at some of the questions that we've gotten.
All right. Now, so the first one, Joe, is what do you do when it feels like you're doing all the work in a relationship?
Yeah, that would be not a good thing. You know, Jesus addressed this on several occasions. He said, you know, if somebody asks you to go 1 mile, you need to go 2. If somebody asks you for your shirt, you ought to give them your coat. It's like you always got to do extra. You know, marriage is nothing more than two ignorant people growing up together. So it takes time to learn about each other. You know, people come to us all the time. Joe, can you marry us? We're in love. We're in love. So no, you're probably blind as a bat and dumb as dirt. You don't know what love is. Love is the most expensive four-letter word in the universe. I tell people, you tell somebody I love you, you better get out your checkbook, your billfold, your 401k, your hunting dog, your bass boat, your rod and reel, shotgun, pile all that on the table before you ever say that again. Because love is an expensive word. It costs God everything to love us. And love's a wonderful thing, man. It's the most powerful thing in the world. So when you get married, you're going to spend the rest of your life falling in love. You don't fall in love in your honeymoon. You know, your honeymoon, you don't even know each other. It takes time to get to know each other. It takes a lifetime. I used to talk about, you know, I don't care how long you're married. Every day you're going to learn something new about your spouse. So you got to start learning how to talk and mostly listen. So couples get caught up in it all the time. Well, I'm doing most of the work. Well, maybe you are, maybe you aren't. Sometimes you're going to sit down and talk. And what would you recommend to somebody that's going through that?
Well, I mean, I have seen lots of relationships where people have felt that way. And certainly in my life, I felt that way at times. And the thing is that I think for me personally that you have to remember what the ultimate goal is, the success of the marriage. And so sometimes, you know, it may be an ebb and flow, a give and take, that you may give more and you may have to sacrifice more. I just think there's seasons and flows and every relationship, but particularly in a marriage.
Yeah, I tell people this is not a 50-50 deal. You know, you do this, I'll do this. You take care of that, I'll take care of this. You pick up the kids, I'll buy the groceries. No, this is a 100-100 deal. This is sort of an all or nothing thing. You know, for God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten son with no guarantee anybody would love him back. So when you get married, I tell people marriage is a covenant, you know. If Hallmark has a card on it and they don't, it should say, I'm so sorry, I heard you got married. Because if you don't die at that ceremony, you're a half-dead zombie. So when you get married, you're promising before God and witnesses and people you invited, from this day forward, I promise to live for this person right here. And we all say it. We got all the sayings in the marriage seminar. You know, until death us do part, whatever it takes, whatever it costs, I'm going to love you because it's a covenant. And in the covenant, when two people struck a covenant with each other, what they said was, everything I have, everything I own, everything I will have, I give to you. If you ever need something, you just come to my house, go in the garage and get it. You don't have to ask me. We have a covenant. And that's what a marriage is. A marriage is a covenant relationship. And that's why divorce rate is so high, because people got into marriage. This wasn't what I thought. Well, probably not, because this is a very expensive relationship, but it's the second greatest relationship to your relationship with God. God said it's not good for man to be alone. God made marriage. He said it's really, really good. Yeah. It's not good for you to be by yourself. Well, you're going to have a spouse who's going to point out your character flaws the rest of your life. Hey, that's dumb. You didn't do that right. You need to do this better. What is it? That's a gift from God. Your spouse is a gift from God to reveal weaknesses. So you need to learn to grow up, and you're going to be done it the rest of your life.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest things is it's not an emotion.
Nope.
Because when you get married, usually there's a lot of emotion that goes with it. But when that dust settles, it's the commitment that you made.
Yes.
And so that commitment, a love, is always giving. So at the end of the day, the more you give, the better it is.
Yeah, and you're going to have to learn, because every time there's going to be seasons when both of you are going to think, well, I'm doing the most. Well, maybe you are today. Maybe you are this week. Maybe you are this month. Maybe you are this year. But both of you need to be talking on a regular basis. Hey, we need to sit down and talk a little bit. What's going on here? How come I'm doing all this? Can you help me with this? Or, hey, could you help me with this? And we've heard great stories of spouses who, after come out of a marriage seminar with us, like, hey, we finally started listening. There's two ears and one mouth. Two ears and one mouth, not two mouths and one ear. You listen twice as much as you talk. And when you do sit down and talk, you need to ask more questions than you make statements. Hey, how you doing? What do you think about this? So one of the things we always recommended, you need to sit down at least once a week for about 30 minutes. Get a cup of coffee, make some hot tea, and just talk. Hey, how's this week going? Well, this went pretty good. This didn't go so good, and I could sure use some help here. Man, I'm really committed. Well, you sure? I spend a lot of time at work. Well, right now we've got a project going on, and you don't work, you don't eat. We pay the bills from what I get paid at work. And there's things you'll have to talk about. You know, well, how come we can't go see my mother? Well, we see your mother about three times a week, and I think that's a lot. We don't need to see your mother three times a week. And you're going to have to eventually talk about things, and it's going to mess with both people. Well, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. Well, I didn't know that. That's why you have to start talking with one another. It's called iron striking iron, so the countenance of a friend.
Hey, let's go ahead and jump in and look at some of the other questions that we've gotten. This next one involves a lot of people. How do I help my child who is being bullied?
Yep, that gets asked quite a bit, especially in today's world. You know, bullying's been around forever. You know, how many thousand years we've been on this planet? There's always been somebody picking on somebody, you know, starting all back with Adam and Eve's family, you know, the two brothers picking on one another. So sibling rivalry, people that don't like you, people that want to put you down. There's two elements of this. Number one is what the parent does, and it's what the child's going to have to do. Because they can't follow you around like a spaceship and go with everywhere you go. You're going to go some places I won't be with you. Classroom at school, some athletic event, some music event you're involved with, some with kids in the neighborhood. And so you got to make sure that you have an open relationship with your child, number one. If there's something going on, if they're not acting right, say, what's going on? Is everything okay? Well, no, everything's fine. No, and they'll usually deny it when they're first being picked on. And so you got to get them to open up. Well, I'm being picked on at school. Well, by who, you know, and why? And it might be a minor thing, might be a major thing. So you got to go through, number one, as the parent, what do I do? Well, I'm going to protect my child. So what's that involve? Well, several things. This can get really detailed. Number one, I want to make sure I'm picking the neighborhood I'm living in. So as a parent, you know, I had six kids, so we're thinking about what are you going to do? Well, it's important where I live because who's the neighbor's kids? Who's the kids across the street? Who's showing up my driveway on Saturday morning? And what do they offer my kids? And you know, my kids just go outside in the yard. They can't play by themselves because they've got other kids in the neighborhood with them. You know, some are either offering a joint or offering a cigarette or offering a beer or a custom four-letter. So it's not all a Christian community. It's in a Christian planet. Right. And so I've got to teach my kids, well, you need to go from the presence of a foolish man if you don't perceive him in the lips of knowledge. Watch out who you hang around.
Yeah.
Pick your friends wisely. A friend is somebody who will die for you, not get you killed. So I'm trying to educate my child. So one of the things we learned probably the hard way with our kids is as they started hitting upper elementary and junior high, we took them to an etiquette class 3 nights in a row. How you start a conversation, how you carry on a conversation, how you end a conversation, how you avoid conflict. You know, go from the presence of a foolish man. This is how you avoid this. Now watch who you're hanging out with. Where are you hanging out? Go to school. Go to class. Don't be hanging out somewhere in the back locker room or behind the building. So you need to watch where you're being picked on. It's very rare that you get picked on when there are adults around. It normally doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And so you want to make sure you have a kid a structured life. If you have an after school, both parents are working, kids by themselves, that's probably not a good thing. You need to get an adult involved, you know, that you send them to somewhere. And, you know, you're going to have to write a check and pay some daycare center or some people to watch my child. You don't want your child alone. That's where they're susceptible. The second thing is telling your kid, hey, guys, you got to speak up. Somebody's threatening you and you say, is there a problem? You know, because bullies don't like being confronted. They just don't like talking back to them. And says, can I help you in some ways? Is there something wrong here? And because I always taught the kids, guys, people who make fun of other people are small people themselves. They don't know who they are in Christ. They don't know the in him, in whom, in Christ scriptures. They don't know who they are, so they have to show off. They're the class clown. They're the class bully. They're telling the nastiest jokes. They have a small soul. That's why they've got to make up for it, bullying everybody else, because they don't know who they are. And so you almost have to help your own kid understand, hey, somebody with a real small soul, bless their heart, you know.
Yeah, I remember one time years ago, I sat by a gentleman on a plane, and he had five adult, very successful, confident children. And I asked him what was his secret. Now, I don't know if this man was a Christian or not, but he gave me one of the greatest pieces of advice in raising kids. He said it was simple. I had the best toys on the block. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, I had the best toys on the block. And I let everybody come to my house because I could see what was going on there.
Yes.
But if my kids went to somebody else's house and they were out from under, you know, me, then I couldn't see what was going on and couldn't monitor it. So I don't let people spend the night in other people's homes. And, you know, I'm just very close on what I monitor and let them do. So I thought that was really wise. And I took that advice.
Yes.
And it did protect my kids from a lot of very vulnerable situations.
Yeah, don't ever let your kids go somewhere you've not been,
yeah,
or that you don't know the people really well. You know, because, you know, one of the great things we were able to do after a few years of living in a neighborhood when we were going to school, and it's a packed neighborhood, said eventually I grew up in the country, and I love that.
Mm-hmm.
My neighbor was a half mile away. There was nobody you were hanging out with. It's just you and your siblings and your parents.
Right.
And so I thought, well, I got to move back to the country. Now, people said, well, I can't do that. Well, you got to do what you can do.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure you keep your kids real busy. There's not a lot of downtime. They're very occupied with either hobbies or things they can do that they like to do.
Right.
Including reading a book. Don't get isolated where you're just thinking about I, me, and me.
Right.
And I'm not doing well and nobody likes me. Nobody will be my friend. Everybody's picking them because I'm telling you, kids like that draw attention. Yeah, I know as a school administrator, I could watch. I could see in the first day of school the ones that are going to have a problem because you're isolated. They're in the back of the bus or they're in the back of the room. They're in the back of the building. They don't have any people skills. They don't know how to engage anybody or stand up to somebody. They don't know who they are. So that's what we have to do as a parent is help our kids find out who they are in Christ and get some boldness about them. So the righteous are as bold as a lion. You want to have a bold child.
Yeah, and definitely not get isolated. Hey, thanks so much, Joe. So let's go on to another question. What do you do when your spouse wants to spend all their spare time at their parents' house? Yikes.
Well, you should have picked up on that when you were dating.
Move to another state.
Well, the Bible says, you know, you need to leave your father and mother and cleave unto your spouse. But, you know, I grew up in a good Southern family, a good Southern home, so... when I was married to my first wife, you know, 3 years into our marriage, we come home, both of us had jobs, and we come home, I'd be at my parents' house, who lived 300 yards behind my house, or she'd be at her parents' house, who lived 3 miles away. So we did not leave our parents. We were very close. So I come home, and I remember one time my wife called the house, my mom's house, I said, where are you at? I said, where'd you just call? I'm at my mom's house. Said, what are you doing? I'm eating dinner. Well, what about me? I don't have to think about you. I'm a newlywed. I don't think about my wife. My mom's going to cook meal. I'm going to go and eat my mom's food. And so we realized that we were really tight with our family. And the thing that saved our marriage, believe it or not, was taking another job, moving 3 states away.
I agree. I mean, when I was 19 years old, I moved from Florida to Washington State.
That's as far as you can get.
And cried all 3,000 miles, but it was because it made me grow up.
Yes.
And now listen, I'm from Georgia. If I could get some Georgia cooking and it was within an hour's drive, I would have been at my family's all the time.
Yes.
But sometimes you do have to, spiritually, even if you don't move away, you know, physically, spiritually, you have to make that choice.
Well, what happens is you start spending a lot of time with your parents, and you're starting to have conversations with them you should be having with your spouse. You're sharing secrets you should not be sharing with anybody but your spouse. You're telling things about your spouse nobody should know except you shouldn't have that Matthew 18:19 between the two of you, not be telling your mother or telling your father, well, they did this and they said this, because you're going to create a division that's never going to go away.
Oh, absolutely right. And, man, if you get that in some people's hearts, that's their judgment filter for the rest of their lives.
I know it. So set a standard. Okay, we'll go visit once a week, you know, if we live in town. You know, we're not going to go every Sunday and eat dinner, but, hey, we'll try to see him. And I say that's too often. I say once a month is more than enough. You know, we'll see him every, hey, we'll come by next week. Hey, we'll come over next weekend. We'll cook out and maintain that. But even that's going to be a challenge because the Bible's very clear. You leave your father and mother. That doesn't mean you'll never see them or send them a card or go to a birthday party, but you're trying to build your own family now. And you're still stuck. You're like, when we had basset hounds, we used to breed basset hounds, and we loved those dogs. But there was always a time when mama's starting to wean those dogs off when the milk would dry up. And there was always some pup that would not understand that. Mama's milk's dried up. It's now time to throw the meat inside the kennel, and all the other dogs wouldn't eat that meat. But this little wean right here, he don't want to eat these. I want mama's milk. Well, there is no mama's milk. Now, I remember many times you'd hear that some dog screaming, went, rawr, rawr, rawr. And I said, well, mama just bit him because mama's milk's gone, and he's trying to latch on. It's got teeth now, and it's trying to latch on to mama's milk. And you can get your own meat. And dogs do it, and humans do it. There is a point where you have to grow up.
Yeah.
And get your own life and develop your own life.
Yeah, so make it a point to get with your spouse and leave and cleave.
Yes.
Hey, thanks so much, Joe. Let's go to one more question. Well, let's go to the next question. So how much influence do you allow in-laws to have in your children's lives?
My answer would be almost none.
Really?
Yes. Parents were given children to raise and train, not grandparents. Now, a lot of grandparents are raising their kids because kids went crazy, got divorced, bailed out, something went south. So many parents or many grandparents in this country are having to raise their grandkids. What happened? Well, the children just went stupid on you. They went crazy, or they ran into something, or they got arrested, or maybe they had a bad deal, a health problem. Maybe they got hospitalized, had a wreck. I don't know. There's a thousand different things. But the goal was parents raise children. I remember people laugh when I teach at our seminar. I said, listen, guys, I loved our kids. We birthed them and raised them and taught them how to talk and walk and got them through school and got them a date for the prom, you know, had them get them to college, you know, pay for their wedding, paid for their honeymoon. You know, I was like Santa Claus stuck upside down in their chimney. But I told them, once you leave the house, you put your door key in my hand. Don't you ever come back to my house unless I invite you. I love you. I've given my life. I've spent $1,000s on you. I prayed for you. I've helped you when you're going through stuff, measles, chickenpox, and a bad relationship that you were dating with. I've been there, but now you're an adult. Mm. And so you put the key in my hand, and don't you ever come to my house unless you call. You don't ever just drop by. And if you do come to my house, you bring food, and you leave food in the refrigerator. And if you do come to my house, you never leave your children here. I'm not babysitting my grandchildren. They're my grandchildren. I've raised mine. You raise yours. And I've seen a lot of families dealing with that today. Well, you know, my grandkids came over. It's like, no, they're grandkids. You're going to have parties and get you some cake and buy you stuff your parents won't buy you and feed you a lot of ice cream. It's probably not good for you, but I'm your grandparent. But I'm not your parent. You have a parent. That's what parents do. They're to train up the child. Not the grandparents, the parent. And so you have to always set a standard, and you got to watch how that they can cross over real easy.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I mean, I always lived away from my parents, so that wasn't really an issue for me, but I can certainly see how, especially if you stay in the same community, it wouldn't be. But that's good.
Well, you got to be honest with your children, too, because they'll say, well, hey, Dad, you know, Grandpa still smokes and Grandma still drinks or whatever. So, yeah, I know. We love him. Yeah, we don't do that. But, yeah, I love him. You know, Grandpa, he sure cusses a lot. Yeah, he gets upset, says a lot of four-letter words. We still love him. We're going to send him a present and invite him over to the birthday party. But you're not going to spend the night with him. Mm. They're not going to babysit you. You're not going to go to their house. And so we just had a standard. Can I go over and stay at Grandma's? No. And then you stay here and invite friends over. But, no, you're not staying there. We've left Grandma's house. We love them, but the whole goal when you have children is children are on loan from God, Angel. They're given to us as a gift from God. We're to train them up, and then we're to give them back to God. They're not my kids. They're God's kids. I just get them for a period of time from birth to adulthood to train them up and give them back to God. You know, you're supposed to leave your father and mother and cleave to your spouse. So the goal is I love my kids. Man, we had a good time. I'm glad we had – I wanted a lot of kids. I wanted a big family, and I got it. And I love that. But eventually, the goal is to get you out of the house. It's to go be an adult on your own. Raise your kids and see your grandkids. So pass on the faith to the next generation.
That's good. Okay, Joe, we have one more question today. What do you do about shared custody when the former spouse is not living for God?
Well, you're almost having to get into some legal ground. We are a nation of laws, so if there's shared custody for whatever reason, their kids are going to go spend the night with their ex-spouse. And so they're probably not living like you're living. And there's always two different people living two different ways. And so people come up to us at our seminar and say, what am I going to do? I say, well, you got to let them go. Well, they don't live for God. Well, they probably don't. But legally, you got to let them go. It's the law. And you're going to violate the law. Then it doesn't matter what they're doing. You're going to be in violation. So you got to let them go. So what do I tell them? I tell them, go where? You know, be a blessing, you know. Have a good time if you can. Certain things I don't want you to do, but Here's the thing that happens when kids start getting older. They'll come back and say, hey, had a great time at mom's house or at dad's house. We got to do this, and we got to stay up all night and watch TV, and we got to play some crazy games. We got to, you know, eat ice cream all night. So, well, that's great. I'm glad you had a good time, but we don't do that here. And what happens is you're getting a match with the next spouse trying to outshow them. Hey, if you had fun there, we're going to have more fun there. We're going to eat more ice cream. We're going to stay up later. We're going to shoot more fireworks. We're going to go to the park more often. We're going to go down here to the local, you know, whatever circus. No, I'm not in competition with the next spouse. I'm trying to raise up my child to be a godly kid and to be very successful in life. And so I've had to tell parents, like, well, I'm glad you got to do that, but we don't do that here.
Well, and I think having been divorced when my kids were 9 and 13, some yep. very critical ages, the difficult thing about divorce is the games that are played.
Oh.
It's very, very difficult. And until you walk it out, it's something that, you know, it's easy to give a flippant answer for, but it's very, very challenging to walk through. One thing that a counselor told me one time that helped so much, he said, two things, be very steady, consistent.
Mm.
And you're the safe place for them to land, but also always tell them the truth. So he said to don't spew truth, like say my spouse had an affair or my spouse cheated or whatever. You know, you don't go, well, listen to what your dad did. Da 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 da. Don't go that list. But I can remember one time my son asked me some very specific questions on why we divorced. And I said to him, now, son, I'll answer these questions honestly if you really want to know the truth. But I want you to think about it because if I tell you the truth, then you're going to have to deal with some of this stuff. Some things are just better not known.
Yes.
But if you think about it, you pray about it, and you really want to know it, I'll tell you the truth. But I'm not going to give you a lot of details. I'll just answer your question. And so sometimes if you can stay steady, answer the questions – it's that steadiness, that safety net that they'll be drawn back to. No matter how tempting going to an unsafe spouse where they allow them to do things may go at some point, it's that consistency, that safety net that you bring that will eventually bring them home.
And don't ever get caught talking ugly about an ex-spouse.
No.
Well, they're an idiot and they're a doofus and they're stupid and they did this. No, don't let any negative come out of your mouth.
Yeah, I mean, I would always say to my kids, if you see this divorce as anything other than hurt people that didn't take care of it and continued the pattern, you'll see this wrong. This has nothing to do with you.
Got it.
And that's where it is. And so when you have hurt in your life, what we need to do is deal with it.
Yeah, this you didn't cause this.
Mm-hmm. And so I think it's your attitude and the way you handle things will be more important than what happens under your spouse's, your former spouse's rooftop.
That's really good, Angel. Some wisdom. So what you want to do is make sure you find people that sometimes have already been through that process and can learn from what not to do. And they'll tell you, people honestly, don't do this, don't say this. And you learn, hey, let's do this right. We're sorry this went south, but we're not camped out here. We're going on with our life. Listen, guys, don't forget, every Monday we'll be answering questions on the podcast. So make sure and get those questions in. Want to stay a little more anonymous, you can always direct message us on Facebook.
Hey, thanks to everybody for your great questions. Make sure to tell your friends about the podcast so they can get blessed too. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we'll be right here. Love you guys.
God bless.